Okay, can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes.
Okay, well, like I said, my name is Jonathan. It's nice to talk to you.
Okay.
How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good.
Okay. So I have a series of questions. I think I mentioned I'm in Dr. Harbert's PA history class, and he wants us to interview a series of PAs who were part of the original PAs. And all of this information is going to get kind of compiled, and it's going to go to the PA History Center at Duke. So I guess I'll just go ahead and get started. I'm just going to ask some general questions, try to get some biographical information, and then some information on, the choices that you made as a PA, if that's okay.
All right.
So could I start off by asking where you were born?
Born in Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. Can I ask the year?
1924.
1924, okay. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Three brothers.
Okay. What did your parents do for a living?
My father was a chef. He was the chief chef.
Okay.
My mother was a homemaker.
And what kind of comes to mind when you think about your experiences in Jacksonville? Was that a pretty positive time, or?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Georgia and South Carolina,
okay.
Washington, D.C.
So how old were you when you left Florida?
Oh, I was, I was an infant.
Okay. So that's not really home. Do you consider D.C. home now?
Yeah, I consider D.C. home.
Okay. What kind of experiences come to mind from Georgia and South Carolina?
Oh, living on a farm, going to country schools.
Okay, what did y'all farm?
It was an orchard, and they had cows, pigs.
What were your experiences like at the country school?
Oh, I remember walking to school, walking down dirt roads.
Was there a point there when you were a young person that you started to kind of think about getting into the health profession? Or did that come later?
No, I think that didn't come until later on.
Okay. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
Probably a fireman.
Okay. So how did you go from fireman to PA?
Well, I went in the Navy, and they put me in Corpsman School.
Okay.
Yes, my test showed that that's where my highlights were.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what started it.
Okay. So it wasn't necessarily that you looked at that and said that that's something that you wanted to do. It was more you noticed a skill from taking the test.
Not really at the time, but once I got into it, I felt that that's what my interest was.
Okay. So were you in the war in World War II in the Navy?
Yes, I was in World War II.
And what did you do in the Navy?
I was hospital corpsman. I served in the South Pacific.
Okay. Would you mind being a little more specific? What was your specific job as a hospital corpsman?
Just taking care of patients, having sick call. I think in the Pacific was a hospital where sailors came down from the islands that they were fighting on, and this was a sort of a salting out point,
mm-hmm.
where they would either go stateside or they go to a rest area, or they would go to Hawaii.
Okay.
The decision was made there where they would convalesce at, depending on their situation.
Okay. What kind of medical training did you have for that?
No more than the training you get in common school.
Okay. I honestly don't know very much about that. I mean, how much, like, what's the time frame for that? How much time was spent training?
Well, it was a 18-month course.
Okay.
And you did OJT after then. And, you know, the Navy corpsman back then was doing what PAs are doing today.
Okay. So were you need anything? I mean, you were doing sutures and splints and taking medical histories and
right, bandage changes and mm-hmm. IVs, starting IVs and this sort of thing, mm-hmm. and getting patients ready for transporting out. You know,
what would you say was the biggest challenge from those experiences?
I guess the biggest challenge was dealing with the types of wounds that you would see coming out of war.
Mm-hmm. Is there any one image or one sort of one patient that really stands out in your mind that you would feel comfortable sharing?
I think the only thing that stands out in my mind is there was a fellow that came back from the war zones, and he wasn't really hurt, but a coconut fell out of a tree and killed him.
Oh wow!
I think that.
I can see how that could stick with you a little bit.
Yeah, that's the one thing that stands out in my mind about mm-hmm. all of the tragedy that I've seen. You know, guy went through war, wasn't hurt. You know, the Pacific War was. It was, I don't know, it was jungle warfare,
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. The guys would come back, you know.
Yeah, to go through all of that and then to be killed by something so random,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's the bridge between that experience and then becoming a PA?
Well, when I got out of the Navy, I figured I could get a decent job as a technician, but at that time they had those type of jobs classified as the orderlies, hospital orderlies.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a job as hospital orderly, and I said, well, you know. Orderlies in hospital, all you do is empty bedpans and do medial stuff, you know, you don't do any real.
Right, not what you were doing as a corpsman.
Right. I said, it's got to be something better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got a job with the health department as a health screening technician.
Okay.
Working on a mobile health unit that we would go around throughout the city. Doing physicals, drawing blood, and taking x-rays, and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Were you in D.C. at this point?
Yes, I was in D.C. at that
okay.
point. And I think the turning point was from that. The General Hospital here, D.C. General Hospital,
mm-hmm.
put a notice out that they were looking for medical technicians to go into what they call a pilot study program for physician assistants.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered for that. I was accepted into that, and we studied and worked at DC General for 2 years.
Okay.
Close to 2 years. And their plan was to start a PA school. But some political things happened, and a lot of the doctors that was going to teach the program left the hospital, so it never got its accreditation.
Okay.
But the chief medical officer there had talked to some people at Howard, and Howard University was planning to start a PA school, and he made arrangements for people that was in the program to go to Howard University.
Okay.
PA program. So that's how I got into the PA program.
So you were in the PA program at Howard?
Yes.
And was that early on in their...
That was in 1973, 74.
Okay. Do you know when they started their first PA class?
It started in 73.
Okay, so you were right there when it began, pretty much.
Yeah, I graduated in the first class. I was in the first class, but I didn't graduate till the second class.
Okay.
Because I was in the Air National Guard at the time, and I had to make up the time that I spent weekends with the Guard, because at that time we were going to school 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to graduate with the second class, but I had started in the first class.
And were you doing other medical stuff for the Guard, similar to what you did as a corpsman, or was that?
Yeah, I was a medical technician with the 113th Tactical Hospital, DC Air National Guard.
Okay, so were you doing some of the medical stuff in the air, like on helicopters, on planes?
No, it was a fighter squadron.
Oh, I see.
But we took care of the whole squadron, including the pilots.
And what kind of work were you doing for the pilots?
Well, the pilots have they have a special unit within the Air Force called the Flight Surgeon's Office, and pilots have to, once they do their physical, they have to be seen by the flight surgeon.
Okay.
A doctor that's in an Air National Guard unit, the chief medical officer has to be a flight surgeon. If it's a flying squadron, if it's a flying unit.
Okay.
But we did, the physicals, routine mm-hmm. physicals, drawing blood, doing EKG, mm-hmm. X-ray, physical exam, plus we held sick call. And when you go away during the summer, your 2 weeks training, you have a full-fledged hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We had a flyaway hospital, and I was a member of that flyaway hospital. And once a year, you had to set up that hospital and work out of it with other guard units wherever you went. You went to, the way it was set up, there were three guard units that made up a wing, and when they went to field training, those three units would go to the same place, and they would bring all of their equipment, and with our equipment, we would set up a field hospital
mm-hmm.
and operate out of that hospital for, the 2 week period that we were away. And they had advance parties that a medic had to go on, like when the fighter squadron would go to Arizona for bombing range and firing range. A medic and a medical officer would have to go with them, and I volunteered for that a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the first PA in the DC Air National Guard.
Okay.
Although I wasn't recognized as a PA, because at that time the Air Force didn't have a classification for a PA.
What did they call them?
You were just a medical technician.
Okay. But you were doing the same work.
Just doing the same work.
Mm-hmm.
But like now, they have a job classification for PAs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand from Dr. Harbord that you eventually made your way into to ENT.
Yeah.
So
once we finished training at Howard University, we were still employed at DC General during that time. And some of the PAs had to go back and work weekends. And but our doctor told us that we didn't have to work, you know, as long as he just wanted us to finish school. So when we came back to the hospital, I think they put all the PAs in the emergency room. And then a lot of the other doctors that were in specialties, you know, wanted PAs. So that's how I got into, I was in emergency medicine for 2 years.
Okay.
I worked in nephrology for about, 15 to 16 years. Nephrology is kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to ENT, and I was in ENT until I retired. I was there for, I guess, 14, 15 years.
Okay. What drew you to ENT? Was it anything in particular?
Head and neck surgery.
Mm-hmm.
In D.C. at that time, there was a lot of head and neck surgery.
Okay.
We used to do radical necks. We did a lot of, removed a lot of foreign bodies from kids' ears, and kids swallow coins.
Mm-hmm.
We would rebuild mandibles, people with throat cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Take the larynx out and do tracheotomies and treat them generally for, you know, cancer.
Does it feel significant that you were one of the first PAs involved in ENT? I mean, do you look at it that way or not so much?
Oh yes, I was the first in this area, right? Yeah. In all of those specialties, I think PAs were the first because I think DC General was a city hospital, and at that time, they were the only hospital that had PAs. I think they had must have been about 13 or 14 PAs.
Okay.
The majority of them worked in the emergency room. I think there were only, well, there was one in neurosurgery. And there was a 4 or 5 in general medicine.
Did you have any mentors in those early years? Any medical professionals, or even not even necessarily in the medical community, but people that you really looked up to, or that really kind of struck a chord with you?
More than the doctors that would rotate through the service.
Okay.
When I was in ENT, fellows would rotate. They had a 2-year fellowship. They would rotate through there, and you meet doctors from a lot of doctors from India, doctors from the Philippines, and I think the chief of ENT was Dr. Safavian, and he was from he was an Indian, but he was from he was from Pakistan, somewhere over in there.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of foreign doctors. Most of them was foreign doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So you would learn, you would get to know a lot of different cultures. You know, the Filipinos, the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'd go to restaurants a lot of times, you know, the ethnic restaurants, which was an experience.
Right.
But we got along well with the majority of the doctors. At first, they didn't really accept PAs. Mm-hmm. And we had a hard time getting PAs on the medical staff.
Mm-hmm.
No. I was the chairman of PAs at DC General Hospital for about 5 years before I retired.
Okay.
And we had all types of problems, you know, getting parking for the PAs, where the PAs could park in the doctor's lot, and even getting PAs promoted. And I had a heck of a fight with the administrative people. We had a resident that was rotating throughout service, and he flunked his rotation, and they wanted to classify him as a PA.
Okay, guess that's how they saw
and
it.
People accused me of being I was insubordinate. They tried to do everything to discredit me.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying that you can't just call this doctor a PA. You have to go to PA school.
That's right.
That was one of the reasons that the regulation got put in our regulations about a PA. A person had to graduate from an approved PA school to be a PA. And it took me the longest kind of time to convince them that, you just couldn't call this person a PA.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they came around to my way of thinking.
I saw the light. So how did you convince them? What was the magic bullet?
Well, I brought them the regulation from the AAPA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the resolution, you know, that said, what qualifies a person as being a PA.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw that I wasn't going to give up on it, so they just dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get any credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that was an accomplishment for me.
Yeah, I mean, even if no one really acknowledges it, it's still an accomplishment, right?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they feared... I mean, did they just think that PAs weren't as qualified, or did they fear it in a more sort of economical sense, or a combination of those two things? Or
no, I think they didn't really understand the PA concept.
Okay.
And the doctors, some of the doctors, the older doctors, would always tell us, you know, if you want to be a doctor, you should go to PA, you should go to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
But, some of the older doctors still feel this way. But majority of the young doctors that has trained with PAs and that are more familiar with PAs don't go along with the concept.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a struggle in the beginning.
So is there any other way that you kind of felt like you contributed to the changing of the PA profession? I mean, that's kind of an obvious way if you played a significant role in getting PAs to be more accepted. Is there something else that comes to mind since you were sort of there from the beginning?
I think just persevere. You just have to be on top of your job. You have to present yourself in a respectable manner.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the nurses, you have to be friendly with them, mm-hmm. speak to them, try to get the cooperation. A lot of them cooperate with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think speak to them every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, be friendly.
Yeah, they can make or break you, right?
And help them along with, you know, helping yourself. And I think that is one way to sway the nurses over to really stop and think what PAs do and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had an incident when I was working in nephrology that I was assigned to the dialysis unit, and the nurse was in charge of the dialysis unit, and she would make the assignments every day.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell my doctor, you know, I'm a physician assistant. I'm not a nursing assistant. I shouldn't be taking my orders from a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he couldn't understand that. Because, you know, he was an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Indians are excellent doctors, but when it comes to an administrative area, you know, they a gray area for them, and they're not up on administrative procedures and all. Not the way that, you know, a regular American would be,
mm-hmm.
because you've been in this system, you know, all of your life. And then when a foreigner come in, you know medicine from A to Z, but they don't know hill of beans about the administrative part.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the real problem. But eventually, he came around to assigning my duties rather than a nurse assignment. So I think that was about the only conflict that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I think after then, you know, everything went along smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other challenges that kind of stand out as an early PA like that, other than just getting acceptance?
I know dealing with cancer patients and terminal patients, and dealing with families,
mm-hmm.
is a situation that you have to really dig down and apply yourself, apply your knowledge, and don't let this type of situation get to you. Like, you know, when you've been treating a patient for a long period of time, you know he's going to die, and then eventually he does.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go on a code and all the doctors are in the code, you are assisting, but when the code is over and the patient don't survive, you're the one that's left in the room.
Yeah. Still there, and still thinking about it.
The family come in, and, you know, you have to deal with the family firsthand. Sometimes they get out of hand, you know, they just go berserk.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to try to console them. The nurse is the last person to come in, and then the social worker and all, but the explosion has already happened by the time they get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not the same always, it's different every time. And so I think this is something that you try not to take home with you, but on your way home, you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I would drive home, I'd pass Bowling Air Force Base, I would stop in the NCO club, you know, and it's get me a beer or something. Or you would see some buddies there and, you know, get it off your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the workload, I think, once you retire, you know, I used to go to work. I live in Fort Washington, Maryland, which is about 12 miles from the hospital.
Okay.
And rush hour is wall-to-wall traffic. So I would leave home at, I wasn't due to work until 7:30, but I would leave home about 5 o'clock. I could get to work in 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now if I left 10 or 15 minutes later, it would take me 45 minutes to an hour, or sometime an hour and a half to get to work. And I would get to work early every day, go over the likely charts, go over the charts, get the charts ready for the doctors to come in and make rounds every day, because we made rounds every day. And I would make sure all the lab work was up, everything was on the chart that should be there, set up the chart, so when the doctors came in, we could start rounds.
Mm-hmm.
That was a routine every day.
Wow.
And when you retire, you don't have to get up that early, but you wake up that time and you get up and you say, what the heck am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You're up 15 to 20 minutes before you realize that you could still lay back down and go to sleep.
Yeah.
But you stay up and deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm into mostly the political end. I'm the chief resident for the District of Columbia Academy.
Okay.
I've been their delegate for about, I guess, close to 20 years now. But we deal with resolutions I keep them up to date on the resolutions and what go on in the House of Delegates and that sort of thing.
So do you miss life in the hospital like that, or do you feel like this is kind of more where your calling is right now?
Hey, Brian.
Do you miss working in the ER or working as an ENT in the more sort of hands-on sense, or do you feel like working on the more political end is sort of more where your calling is right now?
No, well, I miss it. Mm. I still keep up with, you know, what's going on.
Okay.
I keep up with my CMEs. I do a lot of work with my neighborhood civic association. I pass out health magazines to them at every meeting. I try to get health magazines, different subjects, different areas of medicine. Let them know what's new, how they can get in touch with different medical societies and get health information and this sort of thing.
Okay. Did you do any direct work with some of the more underprivileged folks in D.C.?
We used to do health fairs, but since things are getting so political and people are so suit conscious and you have to have insurance and all, we don't do as many, but sometimes we do health fairs in churches where we're invited. Just routine screenings, you know, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we give scholarships to four students every year, and two to Howard University PA program, and two to George Washington University PA program.
Okay.
And we try to, we include students in our academy. We have positions on our board of directors for two students, one from Howard and one from Georgetown. We try to keep them involved and keep up with what's going on in both schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about some of the challenges that you faced as a PA. I mean, what do you view as some of your biggest successes as a PA?
I think some of the biggest challenges we have is being recognized for who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
After coming from the grassroots, I can see where we have accomplished a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a great deal, you know, to be accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are more PAs working in big cities than, you know, there ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
I know I was reading the D.C. Medical Society bulletin, and they have 517 PAs licensed in the District of Columbia.
Wow.
But we only have something like 65 members.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of work to do to get the PAs here to, you know, to join our association.
Okay.
I think one of the major problems we have here is that majority of PAs come from other states.
Mm-hmm.
They work here, but I think, you know, their home state is there. They feel that they are responsible at home rather than here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to try to convince them that they should be members of our academy, either a regular member or an associate member, because you can be an associate member in more than one academy. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can only vote for one.
Well, looking back through your career as a PA, is there anything that sort of stands out as being one of the biggest successes?
I think one of the big successes is being recognized for your work.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the hospitals that I've worked in, I've gotten outstanding ratings. I've got accommodation letters from the medical director. And every year we apply for a resolution for PA Day from the mayor of District Columbia. We've been successful in doing that, and I think that's an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
I think whenever we get any type of recognition from outside groups is an achievement for us. I think getting recognition and getting the laws passed to do what we're trained to do.
Mm.
I think we just got a resolution passed in the district that PAs can pronounce death. And there's a lot of other things that we're working on, like
mm-hmm.
I'm in signing charts and this sort of thing. And we've always had a problem with the reimbursement part because that law is so complicated. You got a federal law, you got a state law, you got a county law. And none of them work the same.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think you resolve one problem here, it pops up down the line.
Yeah.
So I think until we can get things like that straightened out, whether third-party reimbursement can be streamlined, would be an accomplishment for PAs. And I think it would help PAs, the ones that work in rural areas, where that payment really comes into play. When you're working in rural areas, and they're saying that you want more PAs in those areas, but I think they need to do something to help them out. Not just financially, but, something that'll make it attractive for them. I think the PAs that work in rural areas, they want to be there. They want the help. They know that that's where they're needed. But they're not really concerned about the money part of it. But, they have to live and support their families like everybody else. So I think this is one of the last things that a PA think about
mm-hmm.
is his salary. He's interested in it, of course, but I think your heart is in what you're doing.
Right. It's refreshing to hear. Well, as you look back on your career, is there anything that kind of stands out as something that you would definitely want to be remembered for? Anything other than what we've talked about?
No, not really. Just a person that was interested in his job, try to do the best he could do.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I retired from DC General Hospital, I remember the speech I gave, and I said something about, in the military, it's duty, honor, country.
Mm-hmm.
So my ending was duty, honor, hospital. I don't think they got the full impact of what I meant, but
right.
I just had that feeling about it.
And when was that, if you don't mind me asking? When did you retire from the hospital?
That was in, what was that? 1984.
And did you go from there into the more political end of what we've been talking about?
No, I did volunteer work. I was always into the political end of it, but
not,
I've been the delegate for some time, but I wasn't devoted as much time to it as I'm doing now.
Would you mind talking a little bit about the volunteer work that you did?
Hey, pardon?
Would you mind talking a little bit about the volunteer work that you did?
Well, I'm on the health fairs. I got a citation from the mayor, from the governor, last year for my volunteer work. And I got a citation from our senator.
Okay.
A couple of months ago for my civic volunteer work.
What would you say is the biggest difference between working in emergency medicine or working in ENT and the work that you're doing now as more of an advocate?
Well, working in a specialty takes you out of the mainstream of medicine.
Okay.
That's one of the adjustments you have to make working in a specialty. A real adjustment, because you've been accustomed to dealing with the whole patient.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into a specialty, they're only interested in that specialty.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is not the whole patient as such. And that was one of the things that I really had to make an adjustment to. It's like seeing a person in intensive care, and you have to put them on dialysis, do a peritoneal dialysis to bring their blood levels up to the required level.
Mm-hmm.
Your concern can't be on the rest of the patient. Your concern is there, but you're queuing in on your specialty, getting his lab's data up to standard, up to his physical condition, is your job. You're not really concerned about the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real adjustment that you have to make. When you look at it, you know, when you stand back and look at that, you said, how in the heck can you do this? But this is what specialties are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to keep your mind on your specialty and what's involved there. Anything else come up, you can put a console in for somebody else to come and take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
You're concerned about it. You read their console, you make sure that the medical doctors are dealing with it. But your main concern is your particular area.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get out of that, then you get some words from your attending.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not our specialty. Did you put a console in? Was it answered? Did the medical officer know about it? So, you know,
mm-hmm.
those are the inside situations you have to deal with and adjust to.
Well, as you look back in the past when you were a student and you were sort of, you know, figuring out what you wanted to do, was there a particular person that stands out in your mind that helped you in your choice of career, or that helped you as you sort of evolved throughout your career? Any particular doctor or PA or even a politician or philosopher?
You know, there was a lot of doctors that helped me. I think back then you didn't have too many PA role models.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was struck in trying to, you know, trying to finish school. But the doctors that went out of their way to help you and really understood what you were doing, what you wanted to do, you know, people that you would remember. I know Dr. Coyne. He was the doctor at D.C. General Hospital that started the pilot study program. And he was instrumental in getting just about all of those PAs enrolled in Howard's PA program.
Mm-hmm.
and the doctors that, some of the doctors that was at the hospital. I know Dr. Dr. Marshall. He was in the emergency room, and he was a big help to PA.
Mm-hmm.
And the attendings that would come around. Some of them would really nail you to the cross on grand rounds, but then after grand rounds, you know, they would take you aside and explain to you why they were so hard on you. Wasn't hard on you, but, you know, we want you to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, those doctors you remember.
Well, as you look into the future and as the PA profession continues to grow and expand and all of that, is there any particular way that you would sort of like to be remembered, you know, say 20 years from now, as people look back, you know, at those early founding PAs? Is there anything that you want this new generation to remember you?
Guys that was in the fight to get us recognized.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my feeling is that we have overcome a lot of barriers. But we have a few to go, and most of them are technical barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are still doctors out there that don't really know what PAs are all about. And those are the ones I think we have to try to educate to realize that, come to the realization that, you know, we're part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we're not here for individual recognition or anything. We're here to, as a member of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times, I think you have to remind the nurses, you know, this is the medical team. We're here to help patients. We're not here to be buddy-buddy with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're here for this patient that's here in the bed. Now, differences has nothing to do with patient care.
Mm-hmm.
I think when especially nurses come to realize this, and most of them have, you know, I think the profession will be recognized as what it's supposed to be recognized for, patient care.
How soon do you see that happening? Do you think that's kind of on the horizon, or is that still a good ways off?
It's sort of on the horizon. There's still a lot of work to be done.
Would you encourage young PAs to take an active role in that? You know, to balance that with, you know, obviously the other, just like the practical stuff of going to work and, you know, working in the ER or what have you?
Right, I think they have to.
Okay.
I think you have to apply yourself. And you have to apply yourself to the different situations that you're in. And have to be courteous and friendly to people. Speak to people. Be surprised at the people that don't speak to you, don't speak to anybody. But
mm-hmm.
I think if you make it a habit of speaking to them every day, then they'll come to realize that, you know, this is something maybe I should be doing. Or they would say, why is this person speaking to me?
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you present yourself and you know, just carry yourself in a respectable way and respect other people and respect their thoughts. And a lot of times you have to agree with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what the situation is, you just have to let them know that you're a part of the team. You know, I'm on your team. You know, I'm not your enemy.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have the same goal in mind here, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Well, as you look back to your early experiences there in D.C., were there, you know, specific things that you did to help the PAs kind of get started and to get a little bit of respect?
I think working with the medical hospital staff, being a member of the hospital staff, I think that's one of the things that I tell all PAs that work in the hospital, make sure you are a member of the house staff. Because it's the house staff that governs what goes on in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't be persistent and talk to people to get on the house staff, be a member of the house staff, then you're not really a member of the hospital. But those are the people that make the rules and regulations of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a part of that, then, you know, you're on the outside looking in. A lot of times it takes a lot of perseverance to get there, because I remember at D.C. General Hospital, they didn't want to hear them. But PAs on the medical staff, and there's nothing here that says PAs on the medical staff. But I think when the accreditation people come around, you know, they want to talk to everybody. So I think when the hospital is getting ready for its accreditation, a lot of times they just pencil things in, and they do a lot of things that they should have been doing all along.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably one of the best times for PAs to step up and why we're not members on house staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when the accreditation people come around, a lot of times they will ask why you don't have PAs on house staff. They work here in the hospital. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one step when you go to work for a hospital. But I think hospitals now is so chopped up. You know, you got these outside contractors, and you got PAs that are working for contractors that are not working for the hospital. So mm-hmm. They're working for the contractor. I think that's one of the problems that I hear PAs talk about today, is that somehow the contractors don't come into the rules and regulations of the hospital.
Mm.
Or it wasn't included in their contract. So I've been telling city people that deal with these contractors why these stipulations are not in the contract. You know, you got PAs that work for contractors that when they get paid, their first move is to go to the bank and cash their check. If they wait a day, the check bounces.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the government is paying for these contractors. This shouldn't be happening. But if nobody complain about it, it's going to continue to go on. So that's one thing that I would like to see cleared up, that if you got a contract with a hospital, you should come under, or it should be included in their contract as to, you know, the regulations of the hospital and whatnot. But somehow or other, this isn't done. And I think the people that suffer is the PAs that work for them. I had PAs to tell me that you have to see so many patients an hour. So I remember, you're doing a physical on a patient, you take as much time as needed, you're in a hurry because you want to see more patients, but you give that patient as much time as they need it. But some of these contractors are saying 15 minutes per patient. You got to see so many patients an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not really delivering health care. You're more or less running a machine.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are some of the things that need to be cleared up. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for someone like me? I'm about a third of the way or so through PA school. As I'm sort of just trying to get through school first of all, and then figure out what I want to do. Do you have any kind of general advice for someone in my position?
Well, I think most PAs are in the profession because they enjoy what they're doing. They enjoy, they want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested in healthcare. I think the important thing is to, if you want to go into it, if you want, first of all, you got to finish primary care. You got to do at least maybe a couple of years in primary care, but if you want to specialize, make sure you pick a specialty that you think you would enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key point is enjoying what you're doing. If you enjoy what you're doing, it don't become a hassle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It takes its toll on you because you're doing more than you realize you're doing. But you are enjoying what you're doing. So my advice to, a person in this field is to, you're here because this is what you want to do. Just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if you go to work, it's like you hear the guys on football players and baseball players, I'm enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making good money, but, I'm having fun.
Yeah. That's kind of the most important thing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Same thing applies. It's a different feel, but you can get some real comfort, real enjoyment out of helping people, knowing that I've accomplished something. And one thing that I've learned since I've been retired, I had cancer 4 years ago.
Okay.
And I'm a cancer survivor of 4 years. And I became a patient. And that was the most devastating thing that ever happened to me in my life. Being a patient. It's not easy being a patient.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to do the other side, right? We get
right.
So used to being the provider.
Right. But I think having that experience opened your eyes as to what I was doing and what is happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy being a patient. But I think once you get that full understanding of being a patient, I think that's where the impact comes.
Mm. Well, I have just a few sort of small questions just to kind of wrap things up. I forgot to ask when we were just talking about some biographical stuff. Do you mind if I ask if you have any children?
Oh, yeah. I have 4 kids.
Okay.
They're all adults now.
Have any of them gotten involved in the medical field?
No, they talked about it, but they never really got into it. They're into mostly administrative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they've always admired me for what I'm doing.
Does your wife have any experience in the medical field?
Yeah, my wife's a registered nurse.
Okay.
She's a pediatric nurse. Matter of fact, I met her at the hospital.
Well, I think that's everything that I had put together. Is there anything else that you want to say, or anything that you'd like to ask me, or anything like that?
No. I talked to Dr. Herbert. I see him every year at the conference, and he told me last year that he was writing a book, and he told me about the interview.
Mm-hmm.
I told him okay. So we've been good friends for a long time, so.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I appreciate
all right.
You taking the time and sharing all of your memories and all of this information with me.
Okay. I hope everything. I can remember everything.
It was
it's been good talking to you.
Thank you, sir. You take care.
All right. Bye. Good luck in your becoming a PA.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.